we got introduced to all of the people in, I think, most of the North America that did that kind of private equity. There wasn't very many of them. Warburg Pincus had been around a long time, and they wound up being our equity provider at Lariat Petroleum. We started that in 1996. It was a mid-continent, you know, it was going to be an Oklahoma Permian kind of a company. We were going to put together prospects and drill them, and we were actually going to make acquisitions. Warburg, their first funding was $20 million, which at the time was a huge number.
But you brought money to the table, too, at that point.
Yes, but nowhere near
level.
But I mean, not even close.
They saw that your money was in on it, too.
Yeah. When we did cash calls, capital calls from them, I had to write a check also. So I had skin in the game.
And right.
For me at the time, the checks that I were writing were significant checks for me. They weren't large in most people's minds, but they were significant for me.
But they knew that, and they knew that you were taking the risk.
That's why they do it that way.
Exactly. So Colt propelled you to that position. That was great.
You know, I had some of my own money in Colt Resources, too, although a pretty muted level. But Colt Resources, even though it wasn't a huge number success, it did set the stage for Lariat in a couple of ways. The governance was good. We did it with integrity. We made money for our investors. And that really goes a long way. Once you've done it once, it's easier to do it the second time as far as attracting capital. The first time's tough.
The name Lariat, why did you choose that?
Oh, that's also interesting. At the time, I was still team roping. And, of course, Lariat is Spanish for rope. We were having a short meeting, and we needed to pick a name. We had done a lot of other work, and it was down to the point we needed to pick a name. We confirmed that no one was using Lariat in about 5 or 10 minutes with a phone call, and we just picked it up. So not a lot of sight, again, went into that name.
Are you still a horse lover?
Yeah. You know, I actually quit team roping when I was 51 or 52, somewhere along there. My knees got bad. My kids had left home. They were all in college or scattered out and weren't roping with me. So I quit roping. I do have horses at my ranch, but I don't ride hardly at all.
You know, you're a big man. How tall are you?
Somewhere north of 6'1", I think 6'2".
Were your parents tall?
Dad was 6 feet or so.
Mm-hmm.
Mom was tall for a woman, but not particularly tall.
Were you tall for a competitive horse man?
Well, team roping size is not that critical. Now, if you're trying to ride rough stock, my build is not good for riding rough stock. That's the excuse I always use. The facts are, I was just scared, so.
Lariat, how long are you with him? And tell us about some of the exploration.
Lariat was founded in 1996. And again, Warburg Pincus, who I think very highly of, they were our equity provider, made the initial funding. And as you said earlier, I did have my skin in the game, but, you know, my skin was several decimal points removed from the size of theirs. And our goal was to be, again, similar to Colt, to put together prospects, drill those prospects in mid-continent Oklahoma and the Permian, West Texas, and also make acquisitions if we could find good acquisitions. We found a fair amount of oil and gas. We did make a couple of pretty significant acquisitions. In the Lariat days, Phillips was not ConocoPhillips. If you remember, they were having trouble with other companies, Boone Pickens and Chevron, nibbling on them some. We did, at the time, what we thought was a huge acquisition. We bought Phillips properties out of Oklahoma, except the far western counties of the Panhandle that fed down into their Borger, Texas refineries. And these were some of the iconic fields in Oklahoma. You know, some of the original Oklahoma discoveries wound up being Phillips. That was in some ways meaningful to us in that we kept those properties in Oklahoma for a long time.
Were they prosperous?
Yeah, I think they were. Phillips was a very large company. They had Ecofist in the North Sea. They had all sorts of things. And they had kind of starved Oklahoma for attention. You know, it just wasn't part of their game plan to do the things that Lariat could do to those properties. So, yeah, that was actually a pretty good investment for us. I think what we paid was a pretty good deal for Phillips. We had to do a lot of work to take that investment and make it profitable. But I think we did.
Were you a meaner, leaner company that could move faster than bigger companies? Did that have an advantage?
Part of that is true, always, in this business, if you're a big company and have a lot of places you can put your capital. A company like ours, we were pretty focused and laser-focused. So that's an advantage. You're not distracted by having international projects and lots of other things going on. You're focused on, you know, you're driving to it 3 hours away.
What was a big discovery with Lariat that was particularly satisfying for you?
We didn't have a huge discovery at Lariat, but what we had was a series of taking old fields and really concentrating on improving the capital efficiency of those fields, trying to get the highest margin we could from the production and do it in an environmentally and safe manner. But there were a number of cases where we were actually able to drill exploration wells deeper on some of those old shallow fields, and we made some pretty nice discoveries. They were all nice, but none of which were earth-shattering kind of discoveries.
But you were improving on it,
yeah,
for sure. So, Lariat, you're enjoying it? You're having fun with it?
You know, one of the advantages of doing your own company, which I didn't think of at the time, is that you kind of get to pick who you work with. And I found all four companies to be extremely enjoyable in that way. We were, or at least I thought, we were kind of a team and everything else. So Lariat was, I think, very satisfying, as were the other companies. In those days, the industry, we were viewed as running out of oil and gas in the U.S. You know, there wasn't places to drill. We were fortunate in that we felt like we had, say, 3 years of future drilling identified, and that was pretty good for the industry. We got to the point at Lariat that we kind of needed to make decisions about what we were going to do next. We were growing at a good rate. We didn't have to do anything, but we were big enough, even as what's now a relatively small-sized company, to go public. That would have allowed us liquidity for employees. It would have allowed our private equity people, ultimately, liquidity for employees and them. So we put together the S-1, which is the SEC document you need to go public. We hired some bankers, law firms, and, you know, all those things you got to have. In the course of that process, I started getting inbound phone calls from people wanting to buy the company.
You started in 96,
right,
Lariat. So then when are you getting these phone calls?
2000.
Okay.
2000 and into 2001. I kind of talked the board into letting us take a few of those phone calls. So we invited five companies in, and we kind of drew a line in the sand and said, okay, if we do this, we'll go public. If we do better than that, we'll just sell it. And we got some offers that were better than we thought it was worth. So we sold it. Newfield, which had been a very successful company, mostly in the offshore, had not had much onshore, they bought it. And that was kind of the foundation, in some ways, for the Newfield presence in Tulsa up until recently. You know, Newfield's a big player now in Oklahoma in what's called the scoop stack play. And a lot of that is acreage that we had at Lariat. We were drilling vertical wells. Never even thought about drilling the horizontal wells. That's 10 years later,
okay,
and we'll get to that today. So we sold Lariat. Newfield kept the employees. I pretty much went straight from Lariat to Latigo.
Okay, wait a minute now. Something's going on here. I mean, you did very well at this. You personally did quite well at it.
Well, it depends on your definition of quite well. I'm very happy with how I did on that.
Right.
But one of the things that I think I've done a little bit different is at every one of these companies, all of my employees had equity ownership, either directly or through stock options and grants throughout time. So I was never the sole employee owner. And in fact, that's the case today at this company.
Mm-hmm.
We felt like the way you build a successful company is to have commonality of ownership. So we distributed a lot of the ownership throughout employees.
You know, this is sounding pretty smooth, but there were risks you took.
Scary.
Were there sleepless nights? It's not as smooth as it sounds.
No.
I'm sure.
And in fact, in some ways, it is amazing how scary it is to be the CEO of a startup company. In a business, which we are, in which our commodity price is the most volatile of any commodity, and we have little ability to control that price swings. I mean, look at what we're seeing today. We still haven't recovered from the December 15, early 2016 commodity price drop. You know, in 15, we were talking about $100 oil and $6, $7, $8 natural gas per M. And today, natural gas is $2.75 an M and oil is mid-50s. It's been down as low as 30 and a dollar on an M. So, you know, we're in a business in which you don't control your commodity price. And it's also a little bit interesting in that we're in a business to where you can destroy all of your capital. If you drill a dry hole, it's not as if you have an uneconomic retail shop in which you're only getting back 90 cents on the dollar. If you drill a dry hole, you lose 100% of your investment. So while I am very thankful for my career, there was a lot of sleepless nights. And to be honest, there's still that. I think that comes with being the CEO, being the founder.
So any dry holes for you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it was brutal. If you had a quarter where you had a couple of dry holes in early days before we really found the shale oil and shale gas and horizontal drilling, we don't hardly drill dry holes anymore. But early days, there was lots of times it was like, okay, why did we do this?
I'm glad you shared that because it sounds pretty easy.
Well, we had a lot of good people working, and we still do. But if you're the CEO, one of the problems you have is that a lot of your decisions, if they were easy decisions, someone would have already made those decisions before you got to them. So you're doing strategy, and you're trying to look out 2 or 3 years. So you really don't know the consequences of your decision for several years in some cases. So it gets to be tremendously rewarding if you do it right, and tremendously confusing and sad if you don't make those decisions right.
So you did make incorrect decisions.
Oh, there's no question. And I keep kind of a running list of those, and I think about them a lot.
Keeps you humble, huh?
I just don't want to ever get to the point where I think I'm always making the right decision. I want to keep in mind the fact that, look, this is a complicated business, and you don't always have enough data to know which way you should go. So I want to make sure we keep in mind the fact that there are failures in this business.
Yeah. And then you don't know what Saudi Arabia is going to be doing that day.
Yeah, you don't know what Russia, Saudi Arabia, OPEC, you don't know what tweet Trump is going to, you know, send out on pricing. So it is interesting in that it's a business in which the price of our commodity is the most volatile, and we never know which way it's going to go.
So I grew up in a farming area community in North Dakota, and they're at the mercy of Mother Nature. They can't control that any more than you can control what these other countries are doing. It's kind of the same deal.
You understand exactly the point. The price of grain.
Not only do they have Mother Nature, but then what is the market doing on top of it?
Exactly, yeah. You can have a good year, do everything right, and get wiped out right before harvest.